Welcome to our episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Tellius Tyler.
Hey, I know why I'm being introduced first today, but it felt uncomfortable. I wasn't really prepared for it.
Yes, you see, apparently Will has family. I hope you can see the air quotes. Family he has to hang out with because it's Thanksgiving week. So, yeah, he's not here. Lame. Shame on you, Will. Shame. But guess what? Challenger approaching! Okay, that I'm editing out. Don't. I told you there was going to be a pause! See, this is your proof, ladies and gentlemen, that he is not one of us yet because he just broke the rule of silence. Nice job. But yes, joining us for the first time ever on NEP is Skull Kid Scott.
Hello, everyone. A pleasure.
Yeah. Scott is a somewhat recent addition to NEP, and we were actually going to try and bring him in during the Sora trailer days, but things just kept falling apart. But now that Will is gone, he is his replacement. Will had to die so Skull Kid could live.
That sounds way too dark, but also canon.
Yeah. I like that. It's canon. And then we'll just, you know, play the Ocarina, 3 days go by, and, you know, he'll be fine. So... We do have a very fun show for you today, a little bit early because of Thanksgiving, and we'll be even having a Thanksgiving main event for you all to look forward to. But first, what have you been playing? And Skull Kid, since you are our new host, what have you... I know what you have been playing, but please tell the audience what you've been playing over the last week.
So, I had a very interesting week because I started it playing Shin Megami Tensei. And then I switched over to Pokemon, the Brilliant Diamond. And let me tell you, that is quite a difference in difficulty, but also it makes me feel a lot more easier when I play Pokemon, because I understand it a lot better, to be honest.
I was about to make a joke about how Pokemon was harder, but Shin Megami Tensei, but I was like, nah.
Nah. It is not harder.
How is SMT5, though? I'm still dying to get it, but I haven't been able to pick it up yet.
Yeah. So the gameplay itself is amazing. It's great. The open world sections are pretty fun, and they have a lot of random side quests. I feel like they probably could use more teleport points, because there are some places where you have to go like all over the place. The only thing I'd say I dislike about the game is its story is very, not even generic. It's kind of like your character doesn't have a personality, which, I mean, makes sense, but at the same time, at least in other games, you almost feel like your character wants to be there, and this one, your character is, like, being forced to do everything. And it doesn't, yes. Like, mesh well.
Yeah, interesting. And see, I played 4 and 4 Apocalypse, and I loved the story in both of those.
I loved Apocalypse, yeah. 4 Apocalypse,
Apocalypse
was great.
Now, I would say, like, Nanashi in that game, like, it... I guess he was kind of being forced to do things, although ultimately you still had the choice in the end of which outcome to make. So I guess is 5 more like generic, I suppose, with the factions?
Kind of. You have the demons, then you have the humans, then you have the I want freedom kind of factions going on. But at this point, it's like your character doesn't really get a lot of options except the very end. And then even when you choose the option, you don't even get to see what happens with the option you choose.
Oh, that's a bummer. Interesting.
Yeah, it ends with your character going to do the decision, and then it just ends. And it's just like, great. So I did all this and not even get a conclusion to this game.
Right. Oh,
so
that stinks.
It felt kind of very unsatisfying, even though like the boss fights were fantastic. And trying to find all the things you could figure out was great. They didn't, like, the thing about Shin Megami Tensei is it's not as much a cheap game as much as it's just a very strategy-based. You have to make sure you have all the right party members, you have to make sure that you have their skills that you need, and that you have typing accounted for. And grinding only gets you so far, because you can't really power level as much.
Yeah,
but
it's definitely a school of hard
that.
Knocks.
I love having strategy being the basis rather than levels being the basis. But that may be because I like to do like games where I'm always underleveled, because I always feel like if you're at the same level, you're always like going to be a lot stronger than the things you fight. In this game, that's not the case, because even when you're at the same level, they can still like one-shot KO you if they get the right move on you, or if they get a lucky crit. Those are always annoying when you're like, oh, a random enemy. I can easily take on three hits from this guy. And then they crit you three times, get three more moves, and you're like, whoop, I'm dead.
Yeah, I feel like, there's a school of hard knocks in that game, absolutely, where you are going to get wrecked if you've never played a Shin Megami Tensei game before. Mm-hmm. You really need to have that experience and understand, like, one critical hit can spell disaster if you don't have the right team. And there's definitely some trial and error, at least in the other games, before boss fights. But
yep.
I feel like every single RPG should be required to have the same experience system that Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition had, where you could turn on, you would rack up experience, and it was called expert mode, but it really wasn't any harder. You would rack up experience for battles, but you wouldn't level up unless you wanted to level up. So you could just, you could stay under leveled, you could stay over leveled, you could pretty much balance the game however you wanted to. And it just made for like a so much more satisfying experience where you do still get experience, but you can choose when to use it and you can drain it from yourself. Like that optionality is excellent. Yes. I feel like every game should require to have that type of customization where you can fine tune the difficulty to whatever you want it to be.
Yep.
The Todd, yeah, like not silently, as he has no idea what they're talking about because he's never played Shin Megami Tensei.
Well, if there's one to start, at least with the current one, you have a lot of different difficulty settings. You can have a casual experience where it's the fights are a little more dumbed down, so it's a little more randomized RNG. Then you have safety mode, which is basically you basically one-shot everything with whatever you want.
Safety mode. I don't know why that just sounds so funny, because I think of the safety of a gun. It was like, oh no, we're it's the opposite. We're not constraining you. We're constraining everybody else.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
It's like anti-safety.
Safety mode. You could probably beat this game in like 10 hours. But then you have, like, the normal mode, which is, like, the normal difficulty setting in Shin Megami Tensei. That's the one I mostly did, but that is still butts to the walls hard. And then you have hard mode for those who just want to kill themselves in a game, and you will just want to spend 40 hours on the first boss.
Will. No. Or Tyler, in certain cases. Like, I know you with Fire Emblem, Tyler. You're like, this is not hard enough! How is this not harder?
Yeah, I like my difficulty, but I'm not a masochist. Like I find satisfaction. I've never played a Dark Souls game, and I need to. I have Demon Souls, but I haven't played it yet. And I feel like that after you play that, you know whether you have the taste for difficulty or not.
Yeah,
I don't mind. I gotta say this carefully. I like a challenge. I like games that test me. That's why I love Fire Emblem, because when you get to certain levels, you know it's challenging. My favorite level almost in any game is Alencia's Gambit from Fire Emblem Radiant Dawn. It's the siege, you're undermanned, you have to protect like five different choke points, and I'm spamming the quick save because I'm not going to lose a single character, and I'm going to, and it happens all the time because you get like a dumb critical hit even if it's like 3%, and then I'm rewinding like trying to change that this slight thing. And a game we're going to be talking about later, Neo the World Ends With You, that was a difficult game because you're having like six buttons that you have to press to try and beat a boss that's clearly more powerful than you. But I like it when the challenge is deserved versus it just suddenly upscales, which Neo did have at the end of the game. And I'm just like, what? So yeah, I probably won't be playing Shin Megami Tensei. And if I did, I would likely do casual mode because I'm not familiar with the franchise. But yeah, there are limits to my own masochism.
Yeah, I think my biggest problem with SMT5, though, is the lack of autosave. Because
really?
You lose so much time.
Wow.
Because you have to do... As I said, they don't have a lot of save points. They do have them, obviously. But I would lose, like, 2 to 3 hours sometimes because I'd have to... I don't know. Find trash to get more gold or go to do a specific side quest and then get hit by a random normal demon and that would give me a crit and kill me. And I'll be like, oh, great. I just lost that data.
I can't believe they haven't fixed that. I mean, that was the problem with the 3DS games as well.
Yeah. So that's probably my big... That'd be, like, a big issue. But I understand that they want to do that to improve on, like, their strategy for bosses. But when you're just losing time based off of dumb RNG, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of time. And it's such an easily fixable problem, right? Like, every single game has autosave, and it would pretty much take no problem at all for them to implement that to this one. So,
yeah,
that's frustrating to hear.
Yeah, and Skull Kid, well, I'm going to keep calling you Skull Kid because I just like saying that. Like, I mean, I love all of our names here on NAP, but somehow Skull Kid Sky just seems like the best. All right, I'm just saying. Tell us about your time in Pokemon, because we actually were doing some trading before the podcast.
Yeah.
It's nice to know I can do that with someone from NAP.
So I've been actually having a fun time. I've been like, I'm the doing it the casual but also very intense playthrough. My thing with most RPGs is I get really hyper-focused on them. And with Pokemon, it's really nice to just hyper-focus and just not have to worry about of a difficulty as much as this is what I need to do or this is who I need to find. And I've been having a lot of fun. And there's, oddly enough, autosave saved my life the first, like, half of the game because I messed up on the starter picks. And then I had to keep going back and back with resets without realizing I forgot to save. And then autosave saved for me, so... It was great. But I hear there's a lot of autosave issues later we can talk about.
Yeah, well, that's something in the news, because it's a very interesting thing. Like, you were just talking about autosave for another game, and here it is, reeling its ugly head, but in the reverse way.
I mean, they didn't really change any of the real big story beats in the remake. It's pretty much like the same game with just some added extra functionalities with also like added areas, but otherwise, it's pretty much the same game with just different assets.
No, I have also gotten Brilliant Diamond, and I'm ironically not reviewing this game. I thought for sure I had called reviewing it, and apparently not. I actually don't even know who is reviewing it.
I'm reviewing it.
Oh, there you go. There you go. He's reviewing it, so blame him. Yeah, I actually had to buy a game for once, Scott. Thanks a lot. Anyway.
I had to buy it too if it makes it feel any better.
I'll leave that alone. So with that, I actually, because usually, as the host and the guy who usually does most of the reviews here on NAP, I usually take a not a speed run mindset, but I take a mindset of we have 2 weeks to our leader Koopa Keith likes us to review the game within 2 weeks of getting it, and so I usually do a run to where I try and do as much content as I can and beat the game by the end of the 2 weeks. There have been some exceptions that I've done, but more times than not, I beat the game. And because I don't have to do that, I could just focus on enjoying the Pokemon. And it's nice! I like it! I mean, Gen 4 has never been my favorite. 1 through 3, let's see, 6, that was Kalos. I like Sword and Shield, Tyler, not so much. Alola was fine. I like the change in pace. But yeah, 1 through 3, 6, and 8, I would argue are my favorites. And so to get this kind of fresh experience with Sinnoh has been fun. I've been focusing on building up my team and filling out my Pokedex, and it's been really refreshing. I love the underground. Like, I never spent any time in the underground in the original game, because it was just like, what's the point?
It was lame.
It was lame, but they have completely revamped that with, you know, how you do the digging and the Pokemon areas. And, oh my god. Okay. My bane of this game in those initial few hours, especially right after I got into the underground, was Onyx. All right.
Oh, jeez.
And not for the reason you're thinking, okay? It's not that I couldn't beat an Onyx. I had a Monferno at that point. I could fighting move him to death. That was easy. I was trying to catch an Onyx. It was at level 20. I had a level 24 Monferno, I think. And the dang Onyx wouldn't be caught. All right, I have it. Okay, anyone who knows me knows I'm Gen 1 Pokemon diehard and have gotten almost every single game, including the remakes, ever since. All right, I know how to catch a bloody Pokemon. This Onyx was in the red, like barely any health left. I am throwing Pokeball after Pokeball after Pokeball at it. I'm not even getting to the third round, the third bounce, as I like to call it. You know, womp, 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 click. You know, never even got to the third one. It kept breaking out. I threw, like, I had a Dusk Ball, which works good in caves. Didn't work. I was throwing, you know, other Pokeballs that I had. I didn't have access to a Great Ball at the time. And I'm just throwing dozens of Pokeballs at these Onyxes. It's not even the same Onyx. It's multiple ones because eventually it knocked out some of my Pokemon. I'm just like, screw it. So I went back to the surface, grabbed more Pokeballs, went back down, and I still couldn't catch this dang Onyx. It was infuriating. I'm like, what is wrong with the RNG on this? It does not make any sense. And then I met a Chansey in the wild, which is not something I usually get to say in Pokemon games. And then the Chansey was giving me crap. I'm just like, and I had to literally go back in town, grab a Bidoof, which would not evolve for me no matter what I did for it, dumb Pokemon, and use Stun Spore just to catch that dang Chansey. Oh, why didn't you do that with the Onix? I didn't want to do it with the Onix. I shouldn't have needed to do it with the Onix, all right? So frustrating, all right? But aside from that, I'm taking my time. I'm enjoying it. I've been building up my Pokemon team the way I want. I actually don't have a lot of Sinnoh Pokemon in my team, ironically enough. My current team is, I have my Infernape, which I absolutely love. I have Staraptor just evolved. I always got to have a bird Pokemon. Jirachi, which I'll talk about in a second. Luxray. I love Luxray. I got to have him. So those are my three Sinnoh Pokemon. I have Jirachi, which is Hoenn, Gengar, which I now have thanks to Skull Kid, and who's my other one? Oh, Gyarados. I have never had a Gyarados in my team. I've gotten the Pokemon, but I never, especially with the older games, you never took the time to raise your Magikarp. But now that we have EXP share, which some people hate for some reason, I'm like, no, I actually like this functionality. It helps me, you know, raise my Pokemon. But it's the experience. You have to, like, do the grinding on endless hours. No, I think
not. No, thank you.
No, thank you. I did that when, like, the first, what was it, like, three generations before we got the EXP share? I would have, like, a level 70, like, Typhlosion, and everybody else would be, like, level 5. All right? Like, oh, raise my Pokemon. Yeah, right. So, but I have Gyarados now, and I'm just like, you know what? It's nice having a Gyarados. I barely had to do any work on my Magikarp aside from keeping it in the game. I love it. It's nice. So I'm taking it slow because it came out on Friday. Today is Wednesday. We're recording. I would usually be done, depending on how much time I had, obviously, beating Pokemon game, because they're not the longest games if you do like a straight run through, but I'm taking my time trying to, you know, catch Pokemon, fill my Pokedex, doing like the underground and everything. I haven't even got my fourth badge, and I'm pretty sure I'm like 10 plus hours in the game, and I don't care. I feel no pressure. I feel no stress. I'm liking this. I'm building up my team, and it's a nice feeling. And you're right. They haven't revamped too much. They have Ramanas Park, which is a post game content and everything, and then they revitalized the underground, and obviously updated the graphics. I will say one thing. My biggest critique of this game is the Pokemon feelings.
The friendship mechanic.
it's just like Infernape really wants to play with you. Yeah, we're in a battle. I don't care.
I can't even play with you.
Exactly.
This is play.
Yeah, this is play. Exactly. And my the best one, the worst one, is that Monferno was waiting for your instructions. Well, no, duh! We're in a Pokemon battle! It was doing this, like, every turn during a tag team battle. Monferno is waiting for your instructions. I'm about to give them! Get off the text screen! I can't turn them off! You can't turn off these bloody things, so it's like every time it's, I'm doing a battle at night. Oh, Infernape is dozing off. He must be really tired. He's in the middle of a battle! I'm pretty sure he's not tired!
The worst thing is they'll sometimes randomly go to sleep if that text shows up.
Seriously?
It'll be like after three turns. It's like the equivalent of getting yawned.
Oh my gosh, I have not had that happen. That's a stupid mechanic.
It is dumb.
I don't care.
I don't know if it's an RNG thing or not. I just know I've had it happen, or I'll just see him in the fight, and then he just falls asleep. I'm like, what the heck?
Oh my god. Oh gosh, I hope that never happens to me. I mean, then again, I usually end matches within three turns, but
yeah,
like, that's so stupid. And you're like, oh, but it's Pokemon realism. I'm sorry, but if you're a Pokemon and you're fighting, I'm pretty sure Pokemon have adrenaline. In fact, I'm pretty sure there's abilities that feed off of adrenaline, so I'm pretty sure it's awake. Now, if it wants to crash afterwards, absolutely. But no, I'm enjoying the game. Scott, when do you think your review will be up for Brilliant Diamond?
I'm going to guess it's going to be either Friday or Saturday. Okay. As I finish the game already, I want to finish probably Battle Tower so I can test out the new park.
Fair.
Because you have to have beat the battle tower before they let you in the park for some weird reason.
What? I did not hear that.
I didn't know that was a thing. I thought I could just do it right after I beat the game. But like, no, you should go train on the battle tower. I'm like, the battle tower don't help me train at all. They don't even add experience levels. I don't see the point.
Oh my gosh. That's just... Is it just like you have to do like one round or you actually have to win?
I'm going to do one room and see if they let me in the park.
Okay, because like that's stupid. They have never done anything like that.
No, they haven't. I think it was so weird. They like trying to make it be like a story element thing, and I'm like, I don't think this needs to be a story element thing.
Definitely not, huh? All right.
Yeah, so I'm in the first room of the battle tower with like the sixth trainer.
Okay. All right, Tyler, how about you? What have you been playing?
So I am lame and have not gotten Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl yet. One day I will get them, hopefully very soon. But I'm in a little cash pinch right now, so I have not gotten to play it. But I do want to say, though, on your guys' discussions on it, like, for all the criticism this game has gotten, and for my criticisms of Sword and Shield, like, the core of the Pokemon is fun. It's still fun, and it always will be fun. Like, yeah. I feel like Pokemon games have such a high floor that even if it's slightly disappointing, you're still going to have a good time with it, unless you're just done with Pokemon, which, you know, people get done with Pokemon.
Yeah. There's like the small things that you find. Like, for example, I just did a stretch through one area and I fought like four different trainers that had three Pokemon each, but they were always the same Pokemon. Like one guy who was a detective had three Goldeens. Why does a detective have three Goldeens? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, come on. Like, the collector's fine. They all like to collect one Pokemon. Sure, whatever. But, like, those are, like, the very small things that, you know, you're like, you could do better. Do better, Pokemon. You're in eighth generations.
No, I would agree with that. So I have been playing some more Sonic Colors Ultimate. Last week, I begrudgingly said I was starting to like it. And after another week of play, I love Sonic Colors Ultimate. I love it. I love it. I'm having such a tremendous time with it. I beat the game once and I was like, that was not a very fun game. And then I went back to try to 100% it and I just restarted the game from the beginning. And after kind of getting the hang of the controls in that first playthrough, the second one, it was so smooth, so fast. The collectibles were a joy to find. They were pretty well hidden, but not too well hidden where I was scratching ahead and looking up guides. With the added content that they provide, if you collect five red rings in every stage, you'll unlock 21 additional stages to earn Chaos Emeralds. The game was longer than I felt like it actually was. It's still a pretty short game. After you beat the game, you can do every stage in a row, and I did that because I'm addicted to this game, and all the stages in a row took like 90 minutes, so it's a short, it's still short, don't get me wrong, it's definitely not the longest game you'll ever play, but it has 100% satiated my Sonic the Hedgehog itch. I kind of am bummed that there's not more to do in the game, because I want to continue to play it, but I don't want to play the same stages again, which I might end up just playing the same stages again.
I don't want to, but I might.
Yeah.
Sounds like Sonic Adventure 2.
No, that game is just the greatest game. That's
don't
the
get
game.
Like the first two levels every single time, but you always just keep going back to them.
don't get him started, Scott. Don't get him started.
It's one of my favorite games of all time. The other thing I've been playing is Super Mario Party. Holidays are here, and people have been coming over all the time, and we always break out Super Mario Party, or Mario Party Superstars, and not Super Mario Party, Mario Party Superstars, let me be very clear. Again, another game that I love it. I love it. It's exactly what I want from Mario Party. There are some slight changes to the game compared to the originals, but they're, I think, all for the better, across the board for the better. The first one that comes to mind is the way minigames work. In the new games, you first place, I think, gets 10 coins. Second place gets like 7 coins for getting second in the minigame, and third place gets like 2, and the last person gets nothing. In old games, it would be you win all 10 coins or you win 0, unless it's like a specific game where you can rack up as many coins as possible. And in Superstars, they kind of find the happy medium to where you get 3 coins for second and 2 coins for third, so you still get something, but the main prize still goes to the person who gets first, which is It's just so much better. It makes for it if you play it, you understand. Like, it makes such a huge difference with how the game's currency works. Like, people aren't all out of coins. Everybody's always got something that they can do, and it keeps the game engaging. The boards are great. There's some added spaces. They kept the lucky spaces from the new games and then transforms the blue spaces into lucky spaces. The graphics are awesome. Seeing these courses all reimagined, all of these mini games, is an absolute delight in my brain. I can hardly picture what they looked like back in the N64 games, like Bombs Away, where there's this old like pixelated pirate ship shooting at in the background. Now it's this gorgeous the kind of scene unfolding. The animations are wonderful. I love how every character's personality shines through. It's just a tremendous Mario Party game. And sure, I wish there were more boards, and I wish that there were a couple more minigames. I'm very bummed that my two favorite games, Platform Peril and Day at the Races, aren't in this one. But the selection, by and large, is excellent. I honestly can't think of any clunkers. I haven't played one. I'm like, oh, this game made the cut? Outside of the 1v3 minigames, which have always been kind of dodgy. So it's a super fun game. And if you enjoyed Mario Party in the past, this is the one that will win your heart back if you've been kind of cold on the series like I have.
All right. Well, we honestly had a very interesting news week, and we have a very, very important thing to discuss. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. Ladies and gentlemen, we here at the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast love that there are other things out there for you to listen to. We know that there are other podcasts and shows and things that are gaming related that you can enjoy. And in fact, last week we talked about the return of one of them in G4. In fact, we even did a main event talking about how we want to pitch shows to G4 and have fun with G4. And what does G4 go and do? They steal our shtick! All right? And they're like, well, wait a minute, what are you talking about, Todd? Well, yesterday, at the time of this recording, they did their second episode ever of X-Play. And they talked about Multiverses, which is the WB game, their Smash Brothers, blah, blah, blah. And they decided, hey, we're going to do a draft for the characters that they would like to see in the game. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of clever. It's like the NEP. It's like the Nintendo draft that we do. And I'm like, oh, that's so funny, nice and coincidental. No! It was a direct ripoff of us. And I have multiple ways of proving it. First and foremost, they did 3 rounds. We always do 3 rounds, if not 4, depending on time.
Number... I occasionally push for 4 rounds.
Yeah, you do occasionally push for 4 rounds. And you're like, well, Todd, hold on. Draft is not a new thing. You know, I'm sure another podcast does it. What makes this a true steal? I'll tell you. This is a two-parter. They had a commissioner for their draft, and wait for it, they boo this commissioner. All right, and anybody who knows our 4 or 5 Nintendo drafts, every time Commissioner Tyler comes to the stage, we boo him because he sucks. But that's our gimmick. That's our shtick. And they booed that commissioner on X-Play every single time he approached. That's just not ungracious. That's mean. I boo Tyler once and we get it over with. All right? We let him know our feelings. We're done. Okay? Maybe a second time if I'm feeling like he's just being, you know, overbearing. Not that you would be that, Tyler.
Never.
Bit. But you, X-Play, were booing the commissioner constantly. So it was bad enough you're stealing our shtick. Now you're amplifying one of our things. Have you no shame? Have you no shame? So I was legit mad about this. Okay, not really. But I mean, it's just like, come on. Doing a draft, that's fine. That's fair play. Multiple rounds, sure, that's fair play. The commissioner and the booing, no, that's our thing. That's our shtick. Get your own, all right? You're supposed to be G4. You're supposed to be the innovator, not the copycat. Mean!
Yeah, I'm disappointed that they copied us. I'm disappointed they didn't credit us. Next thing you know, they're going to have a high score on their show, and they're just going to act like it was their idea and it was mine.
Yeah.
And lawsuit in the making.
Yeah. Oh, also, there are also some other subtle details that they totally stole from us. Number one, the name. They didn't even go that creative. It was just the X-Play draft, which we call ours the Nintendo draft.
Admittedly, not that creative.
Not that creative. Yeah. And also, if you recall, Tyler, whenever you enter, I always have music playing in the background, Big Blue from Mario Kart 8. Mm-hmm. When their commissioner comes on stage, music's playing in the background. No, it's wrong.
It's awful.
It's all wrong. Also, I will note one good thing that came from that segment in that the one major difference they honestly did in their draft is they did a tag team. So there was two hosts picking one character, and there was two hosts picking another character. One team picked LeBron James, and the very next pick was Michael Jordan. And I decided I had to chime in on this, and because they were asking online which was the better pick, LeBron James or Michael Jordan, in the terms of multiverses. And I went, well, Michael Jordan is the better pick because he only needs to be on one squad to win while LeBron has to keep moving around. Oh, burn.
I'm not going to take the bait.
Oh, it's bait. It's bait, Tyler. It's bait.
It does look delicious.
Yes, it does.
But I'm not going to take it.
Okay. I just want to say, like, the real reason I'm mad about this in a fun way is that we literally, last Wednesday, a week ago, we did our things to our pitches, which we'll do the poll later. We did our pitches to say, welcome back, G4. How can we help you grow? And then they do this crap on us. We're trying to be friends, G4. And you hurt us so deeply. Mean. Breaths. Let's move on. Sadly, I have to go to another very sad story. This one is very personal to me. The sales projection. Oh, sorry. Let's rewind a little bit. Square Enix had their financial briefing, I guess, today. And in it, they revealed that Nioh, The World Ends With You, quote, underperformed. This comes from, I believe it was their CEO who said, quote, while Nioh The World Ends With You was well received by users, it has underperformed all our initial expectations, end quote. This makes me very sad for various reasons, including some I'll get to in the main event, but this is my game of the year, period. Like, Dread couldn't beat it, Pokemon's not going to beat it, and there's nothing in December, so this is my game of the year. And I was like, how did it underperform? And at first I was like, well, wait a minute, Todd. If you recall, The World Ends With You, the original game, it was a cult classic. It was a game that did well on DS, and then it was ported everywhere, including to the Nintendo Switch with Final Remix. And it was never like a Final Fantasy level of sales. And I was like, okay, that's true. And then everyone started pointing out to me that, hey, they didn't promote this game, especially in the West. Like, there was a tweet from a major gaming person who said, I wish that Square Enix actually, promoted this game in the West. And I'm like, well, there you go. If you don't put the time and effort into showing the game off, how are you going to expect sales? Like, look at Nintendo with Skyward Sword HD. They were promoting that game, 2 weeks after its launch, which it really annoyed me. It really, really did. But hey, at least I can say I was seeing the advertising for that. I saw some advertising for Nioh. Via, I think, Nintendo Everything and a few other sites where it was that banner art that pops up or whatever. But that was it. So how can you say it underperformed when you're not the one promoting it? Okay? And apparently they were saying it had high expectations because of fan response. Well, yeah, but if you don't grow the core fan base, you're only going to get that core base, buying it. So, yeah.
I think the name was a huge problem for this game. The Nioh The World Ends With You and The World Ends With You Final Remix, I finally have it straight in my head, but I, for the longest time, Nioh sounds like new, so when I hear Nioh and then The World Ends With You, which is the name of the original game, I think Nioh The World Ends With You is a HD remaster of The World Ends With You. And that's not what it is. I really feel like the name, Square Enix with Project Triangle Strategy and Project Octopath and now Neo: The World Ends With You. They have issues with names. They have a hard time getting good names for their games. And I know that that sounds reductive. I'm sure that there are plenty of other factors, including, as you said, the original game was a cult classic, not necessarily a bestseller. I think that a lot of it comes back to confusing branding and, like you said, just not enough marketing. I remember at E3, the game just got a very brief, like, I think it was in the sizzle reel.
Yeah.
And that was just a bizarre decision for a game that you really want to succeed.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about the, what you say about the name, but, you know, to those who are, like, that new audience, like you, you know, that would, it's very much like the Wii U. It's like, wait a minute, is this an upgrade or is this a new console? It's a new console, but you don't know that. And the marketing would have fixed that, because if you look at the original game versus, you know, who's in the new one, it's a mostly new cast. But you don't know that if you don't see the marketing. So this does.
And you don't know that if you haven't played the original.
Exactly. So, yeah, I definitely think they let this one down, which is sad because, you know, fans like me have been waiting for this for like 13 years. And gosh, I feel old now. Oh, ironically enough, the reason I got the original World Ends With You was because of X-Play on the original G4. They gave it a 5 out of 5, and I'm like, well, if they like it, I'm going to like it. It's on the DS, so there you go. But, you know, I just feel bad because, you know, you could tell, and I'll be talking about this later, but you could just tell that the passion was put into this game to make it, you know, stand on its own and be fun, and it absolutely was. I gave it a 4.5, and I hope, and they even Square Enix admitted that, you know, they're probably going to get sales gradually over time for it, and that's fine, but I would have loved to hear, like, oh yeah, this sold like 2 million in the first few months, and it was a big hit on the Switch and PS4, because it also came out there. So yeah, I wish I heard that, but apparently I won't be, so it made a tear. Just sad. I love this game, and I was like, it's like Tyler, like you and WarioWare. Like, you loved WarioWare, you know, Get It Together. And I was joking with you when the financial quarter came to an end. And I was like, wait a minute, they didn't announce this was a million seller. But did they actually, like, advertise it? I don't think they did.
No, WarioWare, they pushed a little bit. But it, again, with games that are in niche franchises like this, you need to do more than the occasional Twitter post. You know, I do feel like they let a lot of their ball games out to dry a little bit. I'm curious to see what Super Mario Party sales are. I expect those to be tremendous. But Tyler, could also, yeah.
Mario Party Superstars.
What, did I say Super Mario Party again?
Yes, you did.
You know what? I've been criticizing Square for their names. Clearly, the Super Mario Party. It just feels like Super Mario Party is a remake of the original Mario Party. Anyway, Mario Party Superstars. I'm curious to see what its numbers are, because I do hope that this isn't a larger indication of maybe disinterest in the Switch now that it's been out for so long. I don't expect that to be the case, but it's possible.
So, Square Enix, get your act together. And for the love of all that's holy, renamed Triangle Strategy. My God. All right. I mean, we told you, Scales of Conviction, right here. Hire us. I wonder how much could we charge for actually naming a game? Like, we could just, like, milk it forever. Oh, yeah, we had, like, strategy meetings. We did focus groups. We did concept art. Here's a $1 million bill. why not? All right, next up. Yes. It's another sad, sad story. We're talking about Chris Pratt. All right. So, yes, we're still not over the fact that he is the voice of Mario. And I actually know a person who is literally livid that Chris Pratt is the voice of Mario because of his, how do I put this gently? Antics behind the camera? Let's put it like that. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, Google, Google. All right. But there are people in the film development crew who are apparently all behind Chris Pratt doing this, including Illumination Entertainment producer Chris Melisandre, Game of Thrones reference. he could be immortal, I don't know. He said, all I can tell you is the voice that he's doing for us and Mario is phenomenal. Yeah, I can't wait for people to hear it. And he also confirmed that it will not be an Italian accent, thank God. he's not that great an actor, and that they will actually apparently detail why he sent, why Mario sounds different from the games and then in the movie. Not sure how I feel about that. That feels a little fourth wall breaking, but we also don't know what the movie's going to be about. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine, like I said, when we were complaining about Charles Martinet not being the voice of Mario in this a couple weeks back, I just don't think that that voice works in the movie, so I'm not surprised to hear that Chris Pratt's going in a completely different direction. You just have to. Otherwise, they would have had Charles Martinet do it.
No. He also said that his tenor would not be so noticeable. Okay. I mean, I don't know. I mean, until we hear it, we're going to be speculating on this till the end of time. So just, I mean, it's a year away, and it's coming out 22nd of December, I believe it was, or something close to that. So, like, maybe we'll get a teaser soon. I don't know. It can't be worse than the first Sonic trailer, right, Tyler?
No, it can't.
I don't know. It certainly could be.
True.
Yeah, honestly, you're right. It truly could be.
I mean, remember, they thought that Sega thought that that original Sonic design was a good idea.
It was more realistic and grounded, supposedly.
It had teeth that were horrifying. Also, hedgehogs aren't blue. So don't talk to me about realistic when you have hedgehogs. Hedgehogs don't have long legs. All right, they don't wear sneakers. They don't get along with foxes. All right, not even three-tailed ones or nine-tailed ones. And that, never mind. I was gonna make a Naruto joke, but it's not. So yeah, don't tell me about realistic when making, you know, CGI, you know, live action characters. Don't. Scott, we've never heard your opinion. What did you think of the casting for the Super Mario movie?
Honestly, I'm most excited for Jack Black.
Yes. We all agree on that.
I feel like he's probably going to carry this movie.
Probably.
But I can't say I'm undecided on Chris Pratt. I'm more of on the negative just because I don't really think we've heard him too much do voice acting itself. He's more actor than voice actor.
He's in a Lego movie, but that's about it.
Yeah. And even then, that was only okay, except for, you know,
I thought everything was awesome. I thought everything was awesome.
The voice acting wasn't the best part in that movie, and you know it.
Meet me upstairs in 15 minutes. 15 minutes later. I was like, oh, gosh. All right. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. Or is that, should I say, stay tuned for Pratt? No. All right, next up we have another Pokemon story. Pokemon Evolution. Yes, or Evolutions, I guess I should say. I thought it was interesting that we only got the first four episodes and then it just like dropped off the face of the earth. Well, apparently that was planned. Okay. So we got like a teaser trailer with animatics about what's coming and it looks decent enough. I don't know if you've listened to past episodes or recent past episodes, Scott, but I'm not a fan of Evolutions because I don't think they're actually treading new ground at all. Or when they do, they don't go deep enough into it. And for these next four, it actually seems like they're finally branching into new territory. Like for the Johto one, they're apparently going to go back to the, what were the sisters called? The Eevee sisters? I always thought they were called the Kabuki sisters, but that's not right. Anyway, the ones with the evolutions, like, they're going to be involved with Lugia somehow. That's new territory. And then there's going to be a female trainer from Kanto, which was not an option, obviously, when we were playing the original games. So that might be interesting. I don't know. I feel like they kind of took a safe route here versus, like, what they did with Twilight Wings, which was a very, you know, in-depth and beautiful storytelling. So have you watched Evolutions?
I have not. But I think some of my favorite, I guess, animation from Pokemon has always been the Pokemon Journeys ones, just because they say a lot of different stories that aren't just Ash and the gang.
Yeah, I like Journeys. Journeys is fun, most of the time. Except the Suicune episode. I will never forgive them for the Suicune episode.
That one was unfortunate.
Thank you! Oh, gosh, thank you. I'm not alone. All right. Okay, this is actually an important story, so I want to make sure I get this right. All right. We honestly do talk about very serious topics on this podcast, and one of them that is going on right now is the controversy with Activision Blizzard. They have been accused of all sorts of heinous acts, and there's been walkouts, there's been major departures, and many are honestly wondering if this staple of a company is going to shut down. And based on everything we're hearing, they might. And apparently, Doug Bowser, you know, the good Bowser, the good Bowser sent out an internal email to everyone at Nintendo about the situation. And here's what he said. Quote, "Along with all of you, I've been following the latest developments with Activision Blizzard and the ongoing reports of toxicity at the company, among other things, obviously. I find these accounts distressing and disturbing. They run counter to my values as well as Nintendo's beliefs, values, and policies. Every company in the industry must create an environment where everyone is respected and treated as equals, and where all understand the consequences of not doing so," end quote. So, yeah, so apparently someone leaked this out, and that's fine. It's honestly very refreshing. But I am happy that Nintendo took a stand, or at least internally took a stand, if not publicly, about this and reaffirming that they themselves will, admonish what's going on, as well as saying, like, this will never happen here, or at least attempt to promise that this won't happen. And, you know, you can't control everybody, obviously. But this is refreshing because we need more like this. We need more stories like this because we've heard so many bad things about the gaming industry recently with, like, you know, Naughty Dog and the time crunch, and now with everything with Activision Blizzard. We need these companies to speak out and say, this is bad, we won't do this to you, and, you know, never be afraid to speak out. You guys agree?
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly that if you see a problem in the industry, you should speak up about it.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course I agree with that. It's sad that we have to even, you know, have this type of discussion. I'm glad to see, you know, every major company basically coming out and putting their foot down on this. It's a distressing story. I should be following it closer than I am, but it's unfortunately something that we have to deal with all the time, and we become a little desensitized to it at this point.
Yeah. And I was talking about this actually in the article that I wrote about it, in that there's this perception that because it's the gaming industry, you know, that we're making the video games of the world, that things don't go badly, that everyone's having fun, you know, there's no pressure, it's just, hey, let's make a fun game. No. No. There's all sorts of horrible things that happen in the gaming industry. You can go back to even the original days of, like, what happened with E.T. That was a game. You know, the crash of 83. The various things that have happened, even within Nintendo, you know, we've heard various things. Like, we talked about Mercury Steam a month or so back, and how they didn't give credit to everybody unless they worked on a certain chunk of the game, even if that chunk happened in 11 months of their time. So, and then, of course, now with Blizzard Activision and Naughty Dog, EA, like, EA is consistently voted, like, one of the worst places to work, and it's a video game company. So, go figure. As bad as it sounds, we need these stories about, you know, hearing about the worst things so that we can do better, and then exposing those who have done these bad things so that they don't work in this industry again. Because only by, you know, getting rid of these people and putting in people who actually care will the change happen. And to quote John Oliver, who I really appreciate, there's a lot of people who will say that, you know, it's only just a couple of bad apples. Well, the saying is, a couple of bad apples spoils the bunch. So we need to get rid of these bad apples ASAP so that the bunch is not spoiled and we can go back to having a good and decent and fun gaming industry again. Because that's why we're here doing this podcast. We love Nintendo and the gaming industry as a whole, and we like talking about it. But if it was just the cesspool of toxicity and everything, we wouldn't want to be anywhere near it. So, if you are in the gaming industry and something bad is happening to you, please speak out. Learn by what is happening in Activision Blizzard and how the employees are taking their stand and making sure that they're not getting bulldozed or forced silent. You know, speak out, and let's make sure that the gaming industry grows in the way that it needs to, versus the way that people just want it to, who are happen to be at the top of the food chain. Okay? Good. And now, back to your regularly scheduled podcast. let's actually go back to Pokemon, because they of course had the big release of Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, and there's been two interesting stories to come out of that. First of all, is that in the UK, isn't it interesting that we get the UK numbers before we get anything else?
Well, like, I think that they report weekly. I don't think the US reports weekly.
Right. Okay. It's just like, I always see like, oh yeah, here's the latest sales report from the UK, and this game is dominating. I'm like, hasn't it only been out for a few days? Apparently not. Time difference, who knew? So, but yes, Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl are apparently the best-selling Switch game in 2021. Previous was Mario 3D World and Bowser's Fury, believe it or not. And this is a fun one. They're the second best launch of the entire gaming year in the UK, behind what? What game? Take a guess. Think UK.
Ooh.
Not a trick question. Think about what's popular in the UK versus what's popular in the US.
FIFA.
Yes, FIFA.
Good clue, always... Ty. Good clue.
Yeah, it's true. it's absolutely true. Yes, FIFA was their number one game, but apparently, Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl is just behind it. So that's actually very impressive. So and it's so good that Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl were 1 and 2, and then the combo pack was number 9 on their top 10 chart. So people really wanting this game, always appreciated.
I hate the combo pack. It's time for versions to die. One version of Pokemon. There's no need to have the version exclusives at this point. It's so frustrating.
I'm not going to deny that. And it's something I didn't mention in my what have you been playing, is that it feels like I'm not finding a lot of Sinnoh Pokemon. Like, I keep hitting Geodudes and Zubats and what's another one I found? Roselia's, that was a Hoenn Pokemon, or a Bidoof, technically, which that's Sinnoh, but, like, it takes me a while to find Sinnoh Pokemon. I'm like, isn't that bad, you know, like, that we're getting all these other Pokemon? I know, I get it, Pokemon World, you know, all intermixed, more or less, but, like, shouldn't I be hitting the Sinnoh Pokemon more often? I mean, again, I only have 3 of them in a team, and that's because I actually am choosing it versus actually trying to build a team like I actually want. Because I would love to have... Oh, yeah, I forgot to talk about that. Mew and Jirachi. I randomly talk to an old couple, and I get Mew and Jirachi. How does that happen?
You said it was because you had Let's Go Eevee?
I did. I had if you have save data from Let's Go Eevee, and Sword and Shield, and then if you have, like, if you pre-ordered it, you would get Manaphy, but I didn't realize that that's how you got it. So I was just like trying to talk to everybody in town, because sometimes you talk to people and they want to trade. And I'm like, oh, here's an old couple in like the third town I go to. Let's talk to them. Oh, this Pokemon should go with you. It's Mew. Wait, what? Okay, what's the next guy? Oh, here, this Pokemon will be good with you. It's Jirachi. Okay. What? Like, why isn't it always this easy? I mean, my gosh. I have never had a Mew before, or Jirachi, so this is, like, life-changing for me. I have two legendaries, and I'm barely in the game. I feel like that's... I honestly feel that's kind of cheating. I know they give it to a low levels, to be fair, so that you can train them up, but I honestly felt that this should have been something, like, from Ramanos Park, because that's where all the legendaries are. Because now people are more than likely going to just keep the... they're going to keep the legendaries in their party, because it's legendaries. You know, I have Mew finally. I have, you know, Jirachi and Manaphy. And I'm like, that's cool, but, you know, shouldn't you be, you know, getting the other Pokemon? I keep Jirachi because it's actually it's a steel Pokemon along with Psychic. I didn't know that. So that's actually good for what, you know, building up my team. But I actually left Mew behind because it's like, I'm good.
Yeah, too powerful.
It is. And it's just like, you could give it any TM. Isn't that kind of defeating the purpose?
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. And I get, yes, I know the lore. Mew allegedly has the DNA of all Pokemon within it, which is weird when you think about it. So wouldn't that mean that Mew came before Arceus, even though Arceus is God? You tell me. So, but no, I'd use Mew in another run, but I'm just keeping Jirachi. But it's just like, I've had two legendary Pokemon before my first one even evolves. Like, isn't that bad? I digress. Now, the other Pokemon story is that of which we teased earlier, the autosave. Now, Pokemon, to my knowledge, has never had an autosave feature before. It does now! And apparently, it can lead you into trouble if you don't save properly, including at the 7th gym, which is an ice gym. You can accidentally get yourself trapped in a spot with snowballs. You'll understand when you see it. And if you kept the autosave on, you can't get out. Oops.
It kind of sucks. There's also other, like, if you search up, like, on Twitter or Facebook, you'll find a lot of other instances where they'll get trapped, like, under either behind, like, a tree they can't cut or something that has to do with autosave.
Yeah.
It's so a weird, like, problem to have, especially since autosave you don't think would be that problematic in a game. But I think it's because it has a weird variable in it where if you don't manually save after a period of time, autosave will autosave for you.
Yeah.
And so they've just been very unfortunate that they'll hit these, like, barriers, and then autosave will kick off, and then they're trapped in that barrier.
Yeah, oops. Yeah, now, to be fair, you can turn the autosave off, and I will be doing that. I just keep forgetting, because I haven't had a situation where I've needed it. But, yeah, that would suck if I had to start over, like, over, because the autosave would make it so you have to start over.
Yep.
So
there is a trick, though. If you hold up X and A at the same time when you're on the title screen, it will bring up your manual save as well as your autosave.
Ooh. Like
so that. Make sure you manual save, too.
mention that in your review, just in case, okay?
I will be. I already wrote a whole article on just that part. Because I knew that was what people are going to be having difficulties on.
It's true. So, yeah, but it seems like this is already a guarantee. I mean, not we're surprised, but this is gonna be a guaranteed million seller, especially now that we're heading into the Black Friday sale. So even if it's just like $10 off for certain places, like actually my local Meijer, which is like a, you know, gaming grocery store at points, they were giving like $10 off if you bought it there, and that was like on their opening week. So imagine the Black Friday sales. Oh, speaking of which, The World Ends With You is $20 off on Amazon. Get it now. So I will plug that game till the day I die, or until the next game comes out. Anyway, next up, this is a fun one. This is a really fun one. Smash Brothers. There are three pieces of Smash news, and each one is interesting in its own right. The first one is something that honestly feels long overdue, which is something we talk about with Nintendo a lot. Nintendo is teaming up with Panda Global to announce the first officially licensed, Super Smash Brothers Championship Circuit in North America. And it's coming in 2022. And it'll feature both Ultimate and Melee. Tyler, I'm sure you have thoughts.
Yeah, this was really exciting. The Smash Bros. Community has always wanted support from Nintendo. And Nintendo has kind of always backhanded them with, they banned Melee from Evo 1 year. And they have constantly been making content creation difficult for players. Plus, their current tournaments are all, like, at E3, they'll all have weird rule sets, items on, and random stages and things like that. So to have this official support, Panda Global is a huge company. They're massive in the Smash Bros. Scene. A lot of top players are sponsored by Panda Global. This is huge. I mean, this is a new era of Smash. There have been some similar attempts to do something similar last year, or 2020, I believe, the Smash World Tour was announced, and that ended up getting canceled due to COVID, and that was going to be like an independent sort of Smash competitive league. But this is huge for the competitive community, and I think if Nintendo really puts any marketing behind it, we're going to see a surge in interest in competitive Smash Bros.
Good. Then I can win another tournament with Ike.
Yeah, Todd, you're gonna have to practice. I have bad news.
I know. I'm gonna have to practice. Okay.
There's also Sora now there too, so you can't just continuously use Ike's up and A all the time.
But Aether, Aether. All right. Speaking of Sora, which by the way, that was almost Scott's name, but I'm like, it's Nintendo appropriated. Anyway, Sakurai opened up about the making of the Sora trailer, which I still cry watching, and it's so beautiful. And he revealed something, two things actually, that made me just appreciate him even more. He said in an interview with Famitsu, quote, "After reading through Disney's production guidelines, I wrote the whole thing in an hour and a half." I love that. This is like he said he had to finesse some things, but like he wrote the whole trailer like an hour and a half. Love it.
That's like, hilarious. I mean, there's not a massive script.
But... No, but like you think like, okay, how do I introduce Sora into the world? And like you think like, yeah, but this idea is like, no, here's my idea. I wrote it in 90 minutes. Now there was one thing that he did emphasize on, and I also love entirely. And he goes, quote, "At the start, I wanted Mario to swing around his own Keyblade. While he was swinging it around, Sora would appear in the keyhole. According to Kingdom Hearts lore, though, only Keyblade Masters can wield the Keyblade. So while others might be able to use it temporarily, Keyblades always return to their master. That's why we changed it into what the trailer is now." End quote. Love it. Love it.
Respect for source material.
Yeah, and the reason that this is relevant for various reasons is that there is art of like Mario with the Keyblade, and some people actually showed it their own versions of it when Sora came out or Sora was announced. But anything like, okay, well it makes sense, you know, Mario wields the Keyblade, he summons Sora, but he can't because he's not a Keyblade master. So he grabs it and throws it, and the Keyblade does its magic, so Sora gets summoned. That is respect. Ladies and gentlemen, that's creativity, and that is putting aside his own idea to respect the lore. Beautiful thing. So, okay, I gotta ask. Scott, did you cry during the Sora trailer?
Only a little bit.
Okay.
The seventh time I watched it.
I cry every time. Between the music and the visuals, I cry every time, and I'm glad I'm not alone in that. Did you shout when it was revealed it was Sora?
I did not shout because I was at work, but I was instant on the, is this real, is this real, to like all my friends as soon as I saw it. And they're like, we're not even watching the trailer. What do you mean, what is this real? I'm like, dang it!
Yeah.
You're a better man than I am, because when I watched E3 at work, I was like, I got too excited about Banjo-Kazooie. It was literally like having a seizure in my chair, like, this is so funny, I need to tell everyone.
Someone remembers Banjo exists.
Yeah. Well, it certainly isn't Microsoft. Oh!
So sad. That's so far. Bad for our country.
Yeah. All right, now we're not done with this trailer, because Tetsuya Nomura also had an interview with GameSpot, and he talked about how there are now three Square Enix characters that he has personally worked on over his long career. I didn't realize he had that long of a career at Square Enix.
There a while.
Okay, but what game, what Final Fantasy game did he start with? I had to look it up.
I want to say 6.
No.
3.
Okay.
No.
That was my only guess. I can't think of any number.
Okay.
I'm just trying to think of the ones who have all the most belts, and it always gets me to like either 5 or 6.
Oh, but no, he actually came in on Final Fantasy 4.
And then he was a
character designer, and then he slowly worked his way up. And that's how he actually got the rapport to go and pitch Kingdom Hearts to Disney, because he wanted to work with them on the game as not only a writer, but as a character designer. So there you go. Anyway. So Nomura went and talked about the three characters, and he focused on Sephiroth and Sora specifically. He said, quote, "I think Sephiroth was pretty unexpected, so it was fun to see how surprised people were. Considering he was the second Final Fantasy VII character to be added to the game, I was somewhat unsure if it was okay for him to take up one of those precious slots on the roster. I was relieved to see that people responded positively to his announcement." I love that. Because it's like, he thought that people would react badly to Sephiroth.
That's so funny. That's disingenuous. He had to know that people were going to love Sephiroth.
I don't know. I mean, you don't really know until like they gets announced. Like, there was a chance. Okay, there wasn't really a chance. But there was a chance that people would have been mad that it was Sora. And I did see some people complaining about Sora. I honestly did. You're like, oh, come on, it's Sora. Like, did we really need him?
Too.
Yeah, so, yeah, I love that.
I hated people trying to downplay. It's like, really? They got Sora? And I'm like, you don't disrespect Sora.
No.
Especially when you have to go to a freaking juggernaut of a company to get him.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've talked about the hoops that Sakurai had to go through to make sure that Sora got in the game. So, yeah. But I find that interesting, where he's just like, Okay, yeah, they actually are happy Sephiroth is in there. I also want to know, I rewatched the Sephiroth trailer when I'm watching this, when making this article, and it's still so good.
And that might be my favorite trailer. That
Sora
so
is mine.
Good.
Sora is mine. Sephiroth is top five. Little Mac. The Little Mac trailer still gets me. That was so beautifully done.
That's but a good one, too.
World's Waiting for You, Kid. That one I tear up on, too. Anyway, but that one's fun. And then with Sora, he actually admitted that he used this as a business opportunity. Quote, "With Sora, we were thinking that the news would create buzz. Gee, I wonder why. So we prepared some other Kingdom Hearts related announcements to coincide with that day. We knew that putting out any sort of message ahead of time could draw suspicion. So we were lying low to the announcement, prior to the announcement.
That makes so much sense now, because they were so big on saying, we have nothing this year to come out.
Nothing. All right, he went on. The fan reaction exceeded even what I imagined, so I was extremely happy. This is the best part for me, right here. Sora's handshake with Mario at the end of the trailer was an element we were insistent about including, so I hope fans noticed and enjoyed it. Oh, we noticed. Sorry, end quote. Oh, we noticed, Nomura, and we loved it. I love that image. I screenshotted that and put it into every article I could about this thing, because it's like, that's the shot. From Mario to Sora, everyone is here. That's the shot. Love it. Would this trailer still have been great without it? Yes. Was it infinitely better because of it? Yes. Love it.
Yeah, that was definitely the money shot of the trailer.
Yeah.
I do like the Mario picking up the Keyblade, though, and the flame coming around it. It's great.
I love the other shot. The other shot for me was, I love Sora, like, hovering in the air, and then we have that upward shot of, you know, everyone looking at him. This is like, he's within reach, you know. Yes, we got Sora. Sora is finally here. All right, and finally, arguably the funniest story of the day, or the week. Let's talk about the Nintendo GameCube. Okay, was it the best-selling console ever? No. Was it one of the best consoles ever in terms of gaming? Technically. We forgive, Sunshine. We forgive you. Anyway, it's been 20 years since... Oh, God, I feel old again. Oh, gosh. First, it was 13 years for a World Ends With You sequel, and now we're talking about the 20th anniversary of the GameCube. I am old. But it was 20th anniversary this past week, and so a lot of people have been celebrating it in various ways. And some of the people behind the launch of the GameCube, I'm talking like the PR people, they did an interview to talk about what it was like for the GameCube to be launched. And they talked about a very interesting element of it, the color. Because, as we all know, it was affectionately known as the purple lunchbox. And a lot of people, including a lot of the marketing and PR people, were not the biggest fans of the purple coloring, including the former VP of Marketing Corporate Affairs, Perrin Kaplan. There's a name. Perrin Kaplan. I sound like Kapla from Klingon. So, just saying. All right, he goes, quote, "We actually suggested that the purple was not the best to start with, and Japan said, no, we're going to use that. Then we pushed for black and silver, because I think in the US nobody had ever done the purple color before. It wasn't that you couldn't bring out hardware that was a different color. It was just a very, quote, female looking color. It just didn't feel masculine, I think. I remember us being nervous at E3 that we were going to get very bad press purely based on the color."
And that's quote, so full. I mean, that's a hilarious timepiece. I don't think anybody would say that at this point.
Yeah. Okay, there was more, because you're like, well, wait a minute. Why would they think that about the color? Now, remember, this is 2001, so let's view it from their perspective. Quote, "This predates Apple." This, they're likely referring to the iPhone colors. "Picking your color these days is like making a statement. But back then, all the gaming systems were black. Even white hadn't been done widely." Let's forget that the SNES was gray. Nintendo, what?
Gray is not white. That's all I was going to say.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it was gray. That's not white.
Yeah, okay. But never mind. I thought you were saying the SNES... Well, it's close to white.
No, they said that black was the dominant one, and that white hadn't been done before, or had only white late been done before. But like, people have done gray before. The original PlayStation was gray. So I was just like, anyway. But we were always combating what our competitors at Sony and Microsoft were doing from a PR perspective, and having this purple box didn't quite help there. End quote. Okay. I love this story because it really shows you like what they think about when trying to launch these things, but also the perception that purple isn't masculine. First of all, Marvel called Hawkeye wants to talk with you. Okay. He's always been purple. What's the purple mascot from McDonald's?
It starts with a G, I think.
Yeah, the Goobler. Okay, I'm gonna type this up.
Grimace.
Yeah, he always purple, and purple is the color of royalty, and you know there are male rulers, or so I'm told. So I love that they thought, but that's a feminine color. No, lots of guys wear purple. All right, I have a purple Thor shirt that I absolutely love, until I got a hole in it. It was my fault, but that's hilarious that they thought purple made it look feminine. Really? Wow.
You gotta love how shortly after that, though, they started making the purple Game Boy Advance.
There, yes, that's true. That's an excellent point, Scott. So clearly they didn't, and that one sold well. That one sold very well. I'm seriously smiling thinking about this piece because, like, I'm imagining that PR session is like, okay, what can we change about the GameCube? What about the color? Like, why the color? Because purple is feminine. Really? I would have been there. Like, really? Oh gosh. Okay. Let's. And obviously, they did make the black and silver versions later. But can we honestly say that it was the color of the box that hurt the sales of the GameCube?
No.
I really don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. The mini discs. I hated the mini discs. I always thought I was going to be breaking because they were so tight in the port that's not a euphemism. That I really thought I would break them every time I tried to lift them up because they were just so, they felt like they were stuck. You know, that was a deterrent for me. The graphics, you know, I've never been the biggest graphics guy, but like that was my thing. I didn't care about the color of the box. I love that it was purple. I should think I still have mine. I think I do. I don't know anymore. But yeah, purple, everybody. It's feminine. Spread the word.
Nintendo is the feminine company of the three, is what you're saying?
Yes. I mean, if you really think... Okay, actually...
I mean, Animal Crossing, that tends to be the female favorite game.
Oh, yeah. Also, okay, I want to play this up. Because think about it. What do, and I'm going super stereotypical here and just know I'm doing this on purpose. Think about what men as a whole are described as. Aggressive, seeking power above all else. Doesn't that describe Sony and Microsoft? They want the biggest consoles. They want the most powerful graphics. They want the biggest names and studios on their banner and no one else's. And here's Nintendo. Acting like a feminine person, let me explain. They want diversity. They want variety. They want everyone to come and join them in having fun. Isn't that the stereotypical feminine mindset? Apparently, you know, that they don't mind having lots of things to enjoy. That they have all these different colors of the wind to play with. Or all these different kinds of varieties of games to enjoy. Isn't that... what we've been told for so... maybe Nintendo is the feminine gaming platform.
Well, at least we can agree it's not the Ouya, that's for sure.
Oh, God.
Absolutely.
Ouya is the redheaded stepchild. All right? We all know this is true. So I'm going to back off before we get, you know... ladies, you know I love you. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. But I never really thought about it before. If we really want to... go there. Yeah, Nintendo is the more feminine of the three. I mean, who made the motion controls first? It was Nintendo. Just saying. All right. And finally, since tomorrow, at the time of this recording, is Thanksgiving, we thought, and I think we're actually doing this for the first time, which is really odd when you think about it, we thought it'd be interesting to show what we are thankful for from Nintendo this year, because it's true, we like to rag on Nintendo when they screw up. And they do screw up. Just look at Nintendo Online Switch Expansion Pack. We still hate you. We do.
Sadly.
It's so bad. It's so bad. But Nintendo has done something right. So allow us to show you what we're thankful for from Nintendo. Tyler, how about you kick us off? What is something Nintendo did this year that you are thankful for?
You know what? There's been a lot of things that I'm thankful for this year. I think the revival of some old franchises / series. I want to say bringing back Metroid, bringing back WarioWare, and bringing back Pokemon Snap. Those three titles have been absolutely delightful.
Can I pause and say I almost forgot that a new Pokemon Snap came out this year? Because it feels like forever ago.
It really does feel like forever ago. But that was this year, and I think that might be my Nintendo game of the year, to be honest.
Ooh.
But yeah, stay tuned for the holiday shows, for the December shows. We have a lot to discuss. But I think, and even with Neo, I mean, there's a lot of classic games that were brought back this year, and as a lover of those late 90s, early 2000s games, it's been a real feast for me this year.
I like that, and you're right. Like there was again a lot of variety this year that we could enjoy. And even though we're not getting Advance Wars because that's next year, like next year's already looking like really, really good. So yeah, I like that. That's very nice. All right, Skull Kid, what do you got?
I'd say my number one thing I'm grateful for is getting Sora into Smash.
Yes, yes.
I'm so happy they were able to pull that off. I think another thing that I'm really grateful for, but also at the same time not grateful for, is the Nintendo Switch Expansion Pass. Because I'm really happy that they're looking to port more N64 and Sega Genesis titles to the Switch and get emulation on that. But I also am kind of sad of how much they're paywalling, gatekeeping it, basically.
And you know, not doing actual quality ports?
Yeah, they need to work on their emulation.
Yeah.
But there's so much against emulation.
Sad. I mean, again, these are old games. It should not be that hard. All right, for me, my most thankful thing is something we've been talking about all podcasts, and that's Nier: The World Ends With You. It is my game of the year, and the reason that I'm so high on it is that it was just, I love games that I feel are beautiful from start to finish, and I would put New Pokemon Snap in there because that thing is an experience. You know, every time you see that new Pokemon, like, in front of your camera, like, oh, it's this one. Oh, it's this one. I remember, like, he goes in the jungle area, and I was trying to catch a Pokemon that was running away. And then I turn around, and there's a Beautifly, like, literally staring at me with those big bug eyes. And I'm like, hi, Beautifly. You know, it's so much fun. And when you trigger the events that make it seem more like a nature documentary, like the Pidgeot eating the Magikarp, you know, those things are just so special. But with Neo, from like start to finish, they were just telling this grand saga of these characters, from, you know, Rinota to Mini Miyamoto to bringing back, spoilers, Beat Rhyme, Neku, all of them. And then you have the new Reapers, and the old ones are showing up. And you just get the more depth in the world. And the gameplay was so tight. It was different for the first one, but we all knew it was going to be. And
I mean, yeah, the first one played kind of weird on the Switch, though.
Yeah, oh, it did. I mean, I liked the DS dual screen thing. Like, that was part of what made it fun. You know, it was like,
100%.
Yeah, Shiki was, you know, top screen. Neku was the bottom screen. Obviously, I know about Joshua and Beat. But, you know, I liked the idea of I have to, you know, pay a lot of attention. But they made that work for the Switch here with, you know, six characters, six different attacks. How do you use them in rhythm? Rhythm. How do you use them, you know, to do combos and build up your meter? You know, it was a challenge, but it was a good challenge. And the visuals were so good. I love the cutscenes, especially in the end game scenarios where it was just like madness was going on with the end of the world. And, you know, how they use the new mechanics, like the deep dive into your brain, you know, trying to clear things up. I just did the motion. I don't know why. It's like, remind! Okay? And the twist with the time traveling, that was really cool. I just loved this game. And I was honestly tearing up in the end with Rinota and Shoka. And that showed me why I love this game, because it's like, by the end, I was praying for their happy ending. because they had been through so much. And, you know, we got that, finally got to see the meeting between Neku and, spoilers, Shiki in IRL.
That obviously. Was great.
That was great. Because like, they teased it in the at the end of the first game with the whole his message to Joshua. And then finally, we get it for real. We see Shiki in her actual form and not in the airy dupe. And... you know, even Joshua was like, hey, let's not let her wait one more second. And like, even Joshua cared. And Joshua was a dick! Alright? Alright, Joshua was a dick and even he cared about it. And I loved this game so much. It was beautiful from start to finish. I am giving my... The only thing I hated was One More Day, because it did not live up to the hype of the original, which was all about the, what was it? Slammer Jammer? Something like that? And with the pins. Pin Slammer. And, you know, they just like, hey, let's do like a boss rush mode. No, that's a horrible idea.
All right. I always hated boss rushes, to be honest.
Exactly! I mean, it was just like, oh, this is a slightly different day. And it was like an hour long, depending on how quickly you beat the bosses. And it's just like, you know, there was like no fun or depth. That doesn't deviate from the main game. So I loved the game so much, and it was I even looked up my review today for the because I wrote the article for the financial report, and my subtitle was well worth the wait, and it was 13 years of waiting and praying that we'd finally get this game, and I'm so glad that I got to play it. I'm so glad that I enjoyed it. I would say I'm mad that the game of the it wasn't nominated for Game of the Year or RPG of the Year, but Cyberpunk was. Idiots, we all know that's rigged. Like, that thing is rigged to high
it's
heaven.
It's a joke. It's a joke.
It's a sad, sad joke. But for me, it is my game of the year. And I will shout that to the mountaintops. And I will try and get people to buy it, like Tyler, so that, you know, they can see the beauty that I see. And I was unfortunately one of those people that got the early copy and then had to wait like 7 days, 7 days, to get it back. Thankfully, I did not lose my save data, but I was stressing for like 7 days. Like, am I going to have to start over? Because they told me, I called a Nintendo official, and they told me I would have to start over from scratch. And Keith had to buy me two copies, the pre-copy and the release copy. And I felt so bad for him because, you know, it was so stressful. It wasn't his fault, but... I'm so glad I played it and I loved it. It's such a great game. I cannot recommend it enough. I'll probably have to do a piece on it now because it didn't sell well, and I'll be like blasting it everywhere, like, go buy this game because it's so great. But there, when I have that connection with the game, I'm thankful. You know, I definitely had it with New Pokemon Snap. I definitely had it with Nioh. I might have it with Brilliant Diamond. Let's see how the rest of the game goes. But yeah, I'm definitely thankful for that. So, well, anything else, guys, that we're thankful for this year?
Oh, I mean, I guess I'm thinking of just games specifically. And
or it could be moments. Like, for example, I'm thankful that 2022 is looking great.
Like, well, we have
Arceus to start the year. Kirby's getting a new title. We know about Advance Wars. Yeah. Splatoon 3 is 2022. Smash Brothers Fighter Pass 3. Kidding. Kidding. But, you know, I'm excited for that. That's something to be thankful for, that we already know that next year is going to be great. You know, that's a plus.
One thing I'm really grateful for with Nintendo is they're actually doing a little more focus on some of the Japanese JRPG companies that are... Because we've got some of the JRPGs that usually don't come to Xbox now going to Switch. Like the Blue Reflection series, the Atelier series. We're getting some quality games that the Xbox... And kind of still disregards because they're like anime-esque RPGs.
Yeah. Tyler, you going to say something?
Yeah, I'm also thankful for Nintendo's communication. I feel like they did a much better job of keeping gamers in the loop on what was coming out. The Nintendo Directs were more frequent this year, and that was a delight. Normally, that's a pain point for me with Nintendo is they'll just go months and months at a time without giving you any reason to be excited for what's coming up next. And this year they did a much better job than last. Now, I know last had some difficult circumstances with the pandemic, but yeah. Big improvement this year. Yeah.
And hopefully next year we'll be even more thankful for what Nintendo has given us. But if nothing else, be thankful for the games you did get, because there were honestly a lot of them, and a lot of them were fun, both first party and third party. And even though it's technically ending, actually, we got Big Brain Academy, Brain versus Brain next month. So that's one last big release, I would put that. But and then Arceus is in January, so we're like less than 2 months from that. So there's a lot to be thankful for. So even though Nintendo did screw up in certain things, expansion pack, but we got Sora in Smash, we got just the fact that Smash is finally done. That's something to be thankful for.
I'm now not Sakurai... I love Smash.
Yeah. No, I'm thankful for that because now Sakurai can rest. The man deserves it, all right?
Before they force him into another Smash.
Yes. He did. He even talked in that interview I mentioned. He talked about he was just kind of happy that, you know, the team is, like, winding down because there's not much to do outside of, you know, the small additions, the spirits and everything. So I'm grateful for that because the man deserves to rest. All right, the man deserves time to go. He wants to go cross country again. He wants to have time with his cat. Such a pure man. So be thankful that he can rest this holiday season. So please be thankful, ladies and gentlemen, for everything Nintendo has done for you, or that the other gaming companies have done for you this year. And let's hope that next year everything finally gets back to at least semi state of normal, and we can be thankful for that. So with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Dialer!
Yes, last week we asked you to rate our TV show pitches for G4, and 25% of you said Todd Can't Play was your favorite, 75% said High Score was your favorite, and 0% for Respect Your History and Backlog Quest.
Gee, I wonder why they voted for High Score.
That's a great question.
That's a great question. Did you listen to those ideas, Scott?
I looked at them.
Okay. I just said, because Tyler getting high and playing video games, that's what won the poll.
And reviewing them. And reviewing them. Telling you how good they were when fried. That was when fried.
When boiled. When his brain was boiled, because clearly that's award-winning television. Or streaming!
It gets to the core of what the average person wants.
Do you think that would get you nominated at the Game Awards? I think it would.
I think it would.
Content Creator of the Year, Taylor Kellebaugh's High Score. It's like so beautiful, man. It's like the Pokemon. Oh, God.
Geoff Keighley would never give it to me, though. That guy.
No, he wouldn't.
He would give the award to Cyberpunk.
No, he'd give it to Hideo Kojima if he did a TikTok. Oh, it's a burn. That's a burn, but you know it's true. Anyway, no poll question this week. Let's just enjoy the holiday season and see what happens next week. But do let us know everything that you have about everything we've talked about today, including the Smash Brothers stuff. Have you been playing Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl? Which copy did you get? What's your starter? How have you been enjoying it? Do you think that purple is not masculine? I'm very interested in your thoughts. And do you actually have faith in the Chris Pratt Mario voice now that, you know, one of the heads of Illumination says you should? You probably shouldn't, or don't, but whatever. Let us know in the comments below. So, for Atelius, Tyler, Skull Kid, Scott, and I'm Triforce Todd, and ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it into the level, so raise the flag.